Welcome to the Tennis Worthy Podcast, brought to you by the International Tennis Hall of Fame. I'm Patrick McEnroe, the president of the Hall of Fame, and as we continue to look at the values and attributes that go into making tennis the sport it is, today we're focusing on sportsmanship, and we're going to do so through the eyes of three competitors known for their fair play: Hall of Famer Lindsay Davenport, Rohan Bopanna, and Todd Martin.
Sportsmanship is handling defeat, handling tough stuff that goes against you, poor line calls, maybe the crowd getting on you, but also just being able to look your opponent in the eye and say, that's well done.
There were a lot of parents at my academy who came back and said they wanted to show that incident to their kids, just to show how much it makes a difference to be the bigger person and do the right thing than figure out what winning and losing a point. I think it's very humbling.
What benefit is there for you claiming a point and perhaps a match that you don't deserve? Sure, you're rating might go up, your ranking might go up, but you'll know. You'll absolutely know. Know the truth. And that is, bad truth is horrible to live with.
We like to applaud those who show good sportsmanship, but how far would any of us go to steal an advantage over our opponents? And with electronic line calling now in use across tour level tennis, is there room for sportsmanship at the top of today's game? Chris Bowers reports.
If we stop and ask ourselves when we consider someone to have shown good sportsmanship, the chances are it's about a line call they gave to their opponent, even if they weren't sure about it, or perhaps admitting that their racket touched the net on a follow-through from a volley, or that the ball bounced twice. Yet with technology covering all line calls and slow motion replays able to pick up the tiniest of details, does that kind of sportsmanship exist at the top of tennis anymore? Well, there was an example of it in the 2023 US Open men's doubles final. Rajiv Ram and Joe Salisbury were in a final set against Rohan Bopanna and Matt Ebden when a winning forehand from Ebden brushed his partner's arm on the way through. Nobody saw it, and the umpire called the point in Bopanna and Ebden's favour. But Bopanna admitted the faintest of touches and said the point should go to Ram and Salisbury. At Wimbledon this year, I took Bopanna back to that moment at 2-4 final set of a Grand Slam final.
It was purely an instinct feeling for me. I knew the ball had touched my arm, and I felt that I needed to be honest with myself, and that's how I've conducted my entire career. That's how I've been raised, to do the right thing, say the right thing, and I didn't think of it to be honest, it being that much. But obviously after the match, both Rajiv and Joe appreciated that gesture, and Rajiv even mentioned it in his speech. But also later on, a lot of the players, they came up to me and they were really, inspired with, that kind of a gesture, because it doesn't happen, that often. And that's when you really think about it, saying that, yes, there is so much more than just the wins and losses we go through. The way you conduct yourself, it makes a difference. Even when I went back home, there were a lot of parents at my academy who came back and said they wanted to show that incident to their kids, just to, show how much it makes a difference to be the bigger person and do the right thing than, figure out what winning and losing a point, I think it's very humbling. Listening to the, not only your peers, but also, parents of students. And it felt great, But to be honest, at that point of time, it was just an instinct and I just did it, what I felt.
Your partner, Matt Ebden, he was serving. Has he talked to you about how he felt about it? Because obviously it was a tight section of the final set of a Grand Slam final. So there's a lot resting on it.
I think I don't think he had a choice really there, because I instantly said it touched my hand. We didn't really discuss and then decide whether I should give it or not. And thankfully, Matt held serve, so was good, and it worked out well. But I think even if it happens again anytime, I think it's me. Doesn't matter whether it was match point up, match point down, or any point of the game, I'm going to, call it upon myself, especially if something like that does happen again.
So much of tennis is now automated in terms of the line calls. The umpires don't have much to do except calling the score. There are only a couple of elements left, like, do you touch the net before the ball is dead? Do you let the ball bounce twice? Has the ball brushed your sleeve? Do you think actually that we're in danger of over-sanitizing tennis so that actually what you did becomes a big deal when really it should be a normal deal?
Well, I think, everything has evolved so much. I mean, come from the days where sometimes human errors also happen. I mean, with line calls and you're not sure, then came in the Hawkeye where you could challenge those line calls, and now it's, fully automated. And sometimes, those errors also can happen. It's still, I think, work in the process. A lot of the tournaments are trying to get that, fully 100% to get it accurate. I think there is a lot of testing going on, and I think most of the places it does work fantastically well. I know there has been situations, which has been a little bit of issue, especially here in Wimbledon. The last 2 days have been, few issues, but I think it's just like, any other error. I mean, it's not necessarily, bring in the technology and that's straight away going to work, and so it's a catch-22 situation, but I think it's a right move forward for sure.
An awful lot of tennis is played at the junior level and the amateur level, fully competitive matches, sometimes on the Global Masters Tour, where there are no umpires. All the players have to call their own lines. And we know that there are some parents and coaches and friends of players who will say, look, take every advantage you can. And there are others who will say, no. If it's not clear, you give it to your opponent. Do you think a gesture of yours actually helps establish the idea that, no, you do have to do the right thing?
I was raised like that, and I really believe, yes, that is the way to do it. And at the end of the day, if you go back, from that match or from that point, believing you did the right thing, I think that is the most important part. And you need to have a good sleep, because eventually it does catch up to you. No, it can only take you that far if you constantly are trying to manipulate the system or manipulate, the calls. It's not really going to take you that far. Eventually, you need to still be there playing your best tennis and playing the tennis you want to play to win these matches. These couple of calls are not going to make that of a difference. And the more technology is coming out, I think even in the juniors and the amateur level, that's also going to be automated. And eventually, I think it's going to be seamless from all the way from juniors to the seniors.
Had you not called that and won the match, would there have been something that had taken away the satisfaction for you?
100%. I think it definitely would have made a difference. I wouldn't have... Yes, of course, you're going to win the Grand Slam, but I would have known in the back of my mind, there was a situation where I could have been honest with myself and I wasn't. And so I wouldn't have, felt that great. But like I said, I mean, I don't think I would get to that situation to feel that, so I'm glad even till today, I'm glad I made that call.
Now, you deal with juniors. What do you say to a junior who maybe in that split second, there's a ball that they'd like to call out, but they're not sure, they think it might have caught the line? What do you say to them about the right thing to do?
I think, with the line calls, you just got to go with the instinct. You can't really, you always close calls. You think it's out on your side, the opponent thinks it's in. At that point of time, I tell them the more you think about it, it's never really going to change. You got to go with the instinct right away, what you saw the ball, because the ball is traveling pretty fast, out there, and, make that call.
And is there still room for sportsmanship in tennis?
Yes, I think so. I think tennis is such a beautiful sport. It has evolved with a lot of great, sportsmen having played this sport, and wonderful sportsmanship as well. They have showed over the years. I think it's still very much there. And a lot of the guys are, still doing that no matter what or how the situation changes or how the line call changes. I think if they see something is not right, they are ready to call for it.
Do you have one or two idols from the history of tennis who you would celebrate for their sportsmanship?
Stefan Edberg is my big idol. And, you know, I think in some way, not only we are having a good upbringing and thanks to my parents and, you know, watching him play also, the way he conducted on the court, himself on the court and off the court, I think was a massive role model for me.
Rohan Bopanna. We'll come back to Stefan Edberg shortly. But Bopanna mentioned there that the champions in that final, Ram and Salisbury, appreciated his gesture. In his on-court interview at the trophy ceremony, Rajiv Ram said, "That act of sportsmanship, what he did out on the court, we've been playing for the better part of 20 or 25 years on tour together, and I know for sure I've never seen something like that, especially in a moment like this. We'd have had no idea. Bopes, you're an inspiration to all of us." Yes, it was a very big moment, but is it a dying moment? What is sportsmanship in an era of electronic and TV surveillance? Lindsay Davenport, the former world number one and now tennis mom of rising junior player Jagger Leach, takes a much broader definition.
Sportsmanship is a tough one in tennis because everyone always has their eyes on you as a player. There's nowhere to hide out there. Sportsmanship is handling defeat, handling tough stuff that goes against you, poor line calls, maybe the crowd getting on you, but also just being able to look your opponent in the eye and say, that's well done, too good. Also taking the good with the bad. Also how you handle success, a lot to me, is sportsmanship. And not a lot of players show it all the time these days. I mean, Roger Federer is the classic example of a player who's the consummate professional out on court. Venus Williams is another player that comes to mind, and those two have really led the pack for how to conduct yourselves, still be a great player, have expectation on you to win, but not to cave under the pressure.
So has sportsmanship moved on? I sought out a man who's twice won the ATP's Longstanding Sportsmanship Award, an award that in 1996 was renamed the Stefan Edberg Sportsmanship Award. Todd Martin, the Australian Open and US Open runner-up in the 1990s, won the award in 93 and 94. What does he think his fellow professionals saw in him when they voted for him to be rewarded for his sportsmanship?
I think, first and foremost, consistency, poise, professionalism, but also I do think the fact that I was pretty young and taking a level of responsibility for the sport. I was probably one of the more attentive attendees of our player meetings. I was asking questions, thoughtful questions, not trying to be a thorn in anybody's side. And then I was elected as president of the council somewhere in that time frame. You know, we have to remember that these are awards that are voted on by our peers. And so a big part of it is, how nice are you in the locker room, and how good of a practice do you give somebody when you're on the back courts getting ready to compete? And that's where I come back to consistency. And that consistency is both day-to-day behavior, if you will, on the court, but that's also day-to-day interactions with your peers and with the sport at large.
Given that you were elected to the player council around that time, it almost makes it sound a bit like a bribe.
Well, listen, I mean, we do live in a popularity contest realm. And when we're kids, popularity is who's the best athlete, who's the best looking, sometimes who's the meanest. But when you get into that professional realm, I think we're all, one, looking for friends. I mean, there's an engagement, a connectivity element. I had more people who probably could trust me to be their friend than most, both on and off the court. And that, you know, I'm sure that had some bearing.
It sort of makes it sound like you might have lost a bit of your competitiveness. Was there a danger that because you were the guy that people could, you know, rely on and could trust, that they thought they might be able to edge you in a close match?
Well, I mean, put my humility on the side for a second, I would say evidence is proves otherwise. I also would probably take, if I thought about it strategically, I would take a different tact and say what I would have actually been doing was taking some of the wind out of my opponent's venom, right? I mean, like, just soften their intensity. I was the same every day. In fact, when I didn't really like my opponent, I liked most guys I was on tour with, but when I really didn't like them, that sometimes would get in my head. So I kind of liked the notion of them just sort of, yeah, being the same every day, because when I was not the same every day, that's when my performance fluctuated.
When you look at other people who won the Stefan Edberg Sportsmanship Award, I mean, it was named after Stefan because he won it 5 times, Nadal won it 5, Rafter 4, Federer 13, and the women's equivalent, Petra Kvitova won it 8 times, Kim Clijsters 6. Do you see common features among those players and yourself that marks out their sportsmanship?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you pull out Rafa, you know, there's a staid sort of statesperson look and feel, and that is, I think, that is the cliche traditional look on sportsmanship. But I do think the perception element has real origins in how do you look? How do you behave? Are you courteous? Do you have good etiquette? Do you present yourself well? And I would say, again, that is through all arenas of the sport, from the practice court to the locker room to the match court to the press room to, you know, out and about on the town for dinners. And yeah, I think that's one of the reasons it also lends itself to being won by the same people repeatedly. That is part of the ethos of each of those individuals. Again, save Rafa, but in many ways, I think Rafa is the epitome of sportsmanship.
See, it's interesting. We think of sportsmanship certainly at a sort of club level, regional level, anything up to the professional level, as being playing fair on line calls. But I mean, these days, all tour level tournaments, they've got all court electronic line calling. So does that mean that sportsmanship has evolved, and that certainly at professional level, the old fashioned sportsmanship, you know, of acknowledging that maybe the umpire or the line umpire got it wrong, has actually died, and that sportsmanship is now something different? Or was it always that and it just doesn't have the line calling element anymore?
Well, I mean, I'll get literal for a second. It's sportsmanship. It's not behaviormanship, right? And that's why I like to look at Rafa as a shining example of it. My favorite guy to compete against was Pat Rafter. I don't know if Pat ever won the Sportsmanship Award. I'd be surprised if he hadn't.
Yeah, 4 times.
Yeah. But what I loved about playing against Pat was I knew I was going to get his best on the day. He was, in many ways, the greatest respecter of our sport when we were on tour. He worked hard. He respected the opportunity. He valued the opportunity. He loved the opportunity to be playing it. Every time out, frankly, he played like he wanted to gut you, but not to the point of, okay, I'm gonna get weaponry out that's against the rules. But then the moment we'd finish, I mean, by the time we were in the locker room, we could be talking about our match, regardless of who won or lost. And I like the literal. I like using the literal in this respect. It is about the sport. And I think when somebody puts the sport first, it puts them in the best position to demonstrate great sportsmanship. Yes, technology has challenged the norm. And certainly you look at Roger. Roger was the most oppositional to electronic line calling because he was unflappable whenever something didn't go his way. And he knew that everybody else was flappable. And so he didn't like that changed. In his lens, I bet you it was like, it's taking an unknown weapon away from me. So yes, but I think all of us former athletes, and I'm certain of it within the locker room and on tour, everybody really knows. Everybody really knows who have great sportsmanship and who are okay and who maybe not so great. Yeah, and then I would come back to the literal and say, who are the great sportsmen? And you're seeing that. I think Felix Auger-Aliassime is a great example of a guy who behaves himself extraordinarily well, speaks in a respectful way about the sport at all times that I'm familiar with. And we're seeing it right now, the reward for his persistence, perseverance through a really tough stretch of his career. And I would come back to it and say a lot of that has to do with his sportsmanship.
Well, it's interesting you should say that, because I've drawn up a list. We're recording this at the time when voting is open among the International Tennis Writers Association journalists for the ATP Sportsman's.
I vote for Felix.
Well, I'm going to read you the 9 nominees, actually. Alex de Minaur, Carlos Alcaraz, Casper Ruud, Felix Auger-Aliassime, Gabriel Diallo, Grigor Dimitrov, Karen Khachanov, Novak Djokovic, and Taylor Fritz. Now, by and large, you've got a group of people who, as you say, you know, there's some previous winners on there. The one that jumps out at me in that, actually, is the other Canadian, Gabriel Diallo, who is just a lovely guy. In fact, a colleague of mine, a Canadian tennis journalist, said, if I had a daughter, I'd be delighted for her to bring him home as a boyfriend. But, part of me thinks, is he successful enough to gain it? Because you have to have that mixture, don't you, of success and decency.
Well, I think to be recognized by your peers, yes. But to be a good sportsman, you don't need to have the success. The fact that Felix is having success now, again, at a level that is unique, is not evidence of being a better sportsman today than he was yesterday. It's evidence of being a great sportsman these last few years, while his results were maybe not what people had anticipated several years ago for him. So I love that. I think all of those individuals are really very unique, one to the next. Karen Khachanov is one of the friendliest human beings I have ever met in my life. I mean, he'll talk to anybody, and it's authentic. I feel similarly about Grigor Dimitrov. These guys love what they're doing, and I think their peers recognize that. And then you look at Demonauer. This guy's cut straight from the Australian cloth. He's just like, let's go have a game. I'd rather have a game than not today. And I'm gonna put my best foot forward no matter what. So lots of cool examples of great sportsmen there.
Okay, I'm going to have a bit of fun with you now, Todd. Earlier in this podcast, we heard from Lindsay Davenport, who, like you, has given a very wide definition of modern-day sportsmanship. But I'd like to play you another clip from Lindsay. She's talking here about the often manic nature of night sessions at the US Open, and she mentions you.
I think Todd Martin, more than anybody, surprised everybody in the tennis world when he played night matches at the US Open. There was a different side of Todd. You saw roars, you saw fist pumps, you saw yelling to the crowd. You saw him one time, I think, running around the stadium giving high fives. And Todd was always so reserved and seemed shy on the court. And he became a beast in those night matches.
Now, beast isn't a word I'd associate with you, but is there a serious point here that even the most sporting of tennis players have to let off a bit of steam every now and again? Or actually, were you not a beast? Did it just seem like you were a beast?
No, I absolutely think I am a beast. I was a beast every day. It's just a matter of what comes out. You know, and when I talk flatteringly about Patrick Rafter, he's the biggest beast there is. And he didn't need to grandstand it. Pat and I are very different in certain ways, but I think I have a very similar, I don't know many people who enjoy competition more than me. Now, I don't enjoy competition because of winning. I enjoy competition. And when somebody is like that, the outside could be long hair and tattoos and ear piercings and whatever, or, you know, it can be sort of nerdy, goody two shoes looking, shirt tucked in because my coach when I was 10 told me I had to have my shirt tucked in, whatever. I mean, like, don't let the cover tell the whole story of the book.
Okay, so let's round this off by looking forward to the next generation. And you know that coaches of teenagers will be saying, you know, you've got to seize every advantage, incremental gain, don't let any opportunity go by. So what happens when they're in a situation where they could claim a point because they can get away with it, which shouldn't be rightfully theirs? What would you say to a youngster about the role of sportsmanship in that heightened situation where it is in their immediate practical interest not to be sportsmanlike?
One, I would make sure, if I were the educator or the parent, the coach, that everybody understand that the sport is greater than all of us. And then two, I would ask the child, to what end? To what end? What benefit is there for you claiming a point and perhaps a match that you don't deserve, that you didn't earn? Sure, your rating might go up, your ranking might go up, but you'll know. You'll absolutely know. Know the truth. And that is, bad truth is horrible to live with. And I just wouldn't want anybody that I was associated with or looked up to me to feel that way.
But Todd, you know that back in, it's quite a long time ago, 1997, the National Collegiate Athletic Association, you know, the governing body of sports in American universities, abandoned the let serve because there were too many players who, when they were aced or had an unreturnable serve, would say, oh, it was a let, wasn't it? So they had to stop the cheating by changing the rules. Now, that tells you that there is that mentality out there. How, I love it when you talk about to what end, what benefit do you gain when, if it's against the interest of the sport, but you're up against an awful lot of pressures there.
Oh, Chris, I would never say what I said without acknowledging that that's not the reality. That's not the message that coaches have given over the years. That's not the message that a lot of parents would convey to their children. But I mean, I'm 55 now, so it's even easier for me to say this as a 55-year-old than it would have been as a 15-year-old or a 25-year-old. But life is short. And why would you ever want to take something like that to your grave with you? I just, you know, at the same time, I also consider the sport or competition not to be the end all be all. It's not life or death. And I realized that that could be used against my argument. Like, it's not life or death. It's like, yeah, it's just like, yeah, but we won, you know? So I accept that. Yet at the end of the day, we're all living with our own internal voice that talks to us. And I do believe there's an internal mirror as well that says, yeah, I didn't really get it. I got it, but I didn't really get it. And I think the beauty of our sport of late is you see people who have not cut any corners having great success, which is, you know, we're really fortunate in that respect. We've had amazing stewardship of the sport for the last couple of generations.
Todd Martin, and there's lots to discuss from that interview in the Tennis Club Bar. Perhaps most notably, whether what Martin calls bad truth really does have the power to civilize the potential cheat that he feels it does, and whether the integrity of tennis is dependent on players just knowing what's the right thing to do.
Chris Bowers on the delicate issue of sportsmanship and how it continues to evolve in our sport. If you've missed our other podcasts exploring values and attributes like leadership, mental toughness, boldness, independence, and others, please scroll through the list of tennis-worthy podcasts. There are some great listens which will get you thinking and give you plenty to discuss over that after tennis drink. The Tennis-Worthy Podcast is brought to you by the International Tennis Hall of Fame. I'm Patrick McEnroe. Thanks for listening. See you again soon.